Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey everybody, you're listening Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you like the shows we do on this network, consider contributing to our Patreon at radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. See you on the back end of the theme music. Stay tuned for more Into the Dark.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not always
in the often erotic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down,
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. We have a very special show for you today, in part because it's just the very last one. Things are coming to an end here for Into the Dark at Radio Free Brooklyn, and that's okay. Death is natural, and death is beautiful, and it is through death that things are reborn. I was recently reading part of a memoir someone wrote about going back to the family farm and taking up farming and thinking about that. And one of the things they said very early on, I think in the first paragraph, was the idea of going to a place where everything was living and dying, growing and dying, being born and dying. And it's a good thing to think about. A bit depressing, I will admit. But we have a great interview today I did with Dakota Hendricks, who's a witch and diviner, clairvoyant, medium, a fascinating human being, a really wonderful, inspiring life story. And this, I think, was one of my favorite interviews that I've done on the show, simply because not only were they terribly knowledgeable and had a very fascinating story and very open, a lot of great ideas, a lot of good things to say, but also I like Dakota on a personal level, and it felt like this interview, more than a lot of the other ones, sort of just devolved into a conversation by the end and just palling around, which in a way gets to the heart of what this show has been about, which in part it's an educational show. We're here to give you information about witchcraft, find witchcraft answers to your witchcraft questions, and increase awareness about witchcraft in general and the different kinds, the different forms of occultism that you might engage in should you so desire. But also, a big part of this show, for me at least, was the idea that when I was putting this show together, I was very aware of the satanic panic of the 1990s and the idea that a lot of people know so little about witches and witchcraft and people who engage in these sorts of practices that it's very easy for them to believe anything and to find any witch or witchy type person as potentially threatening, to the point where they can be, I would argue, overly credulous to accusations without any sort of evidence. I'm speaking, of course, mostly about the Satanic Panic of the 1990s, in which a number of people were accused of abusing children as part of satanic rituals, but there was no evidence. It was very clear that the children's testimony seemed to be probably forced, but people were willing to believe it because they were terrified that America had some sort of underground satanic army just brewing and waiting to do an overthrow. And so part of the idea of doing this show, beyond education, was just to show people who might be listening who aren't witches, or who are mildly curious but don't really know a lot about witchcraft, that witches are people you know already. You probably see them on a daily basis. Maybe they are the people who work at the coffee shop around the corner from you, the people who sort your mail at the post office, something like that. Like, these people are friendly. These people are probably already your friends. And it's okay. This is not a thing to be afraid of. Witches are some of the most wonderful people you might encounter on any given day. But enough about that. Let's instead take a moment and talk about something. Before we get to that interview with Dakota, let us take a moment to talk about someone who was on the show a while back, Douglas Lucas, who did an interview about his record label, which is an occult record label. You should go back, check out that interview, check out that label. He has released a new album. And he told me about it right before I was finishing up this episode. So, perfect timing. And I'm very excited to bring you a sample of it. So this new album is three tracks that are geared toward being sonic spells. They are ritualistic in nature. And I'm going to play you one of these. This is a composition called Visions. And there's a description here. And the description is, Visions is best heard at midnight and repeated on a loop throughout the night to trigger and aid dreams. And it is 666 seconds long. And the sounds therein include vinyl records, pencil tracing, an Icelandic stave, binaural tone at the delta wave of 4242. And there's a little note here. Discovered in 1839 by Heinrich Wilhelm Dove, binaural tones are auditory processing artifacts or apparent sounds, the perception of which arises in the brain independent of physical stimuli, originating in the superior olivary nucleus, a part of the brainstem. Delta waves are associated with dreams, REM sleep, meditation, and loss of body awareness. So here's a sample of that. That's fantastic. The first time I heard that, actually, I had this like feeling in my mouth that I couldn't quite describe, like a physical sensation from it. So that was very exciting. So thank you to Douglas for sending that. Check out that album. And that album is Sonic Spells, and you can get it by going to, I'm going to post a link to this when it becomes a podcast this episode, but you can get that by going to damagesmusic.bandcamp.com. And the album is just called Sonic Spell. So now we're going to move over to my interview with Dakota Hendricks. Dakota Hendricks, a wonderful witch, really knowledgeable about witchcraft, and really just exudes witchiness in this way that is enthralling, inspiring, and beautiful. So I went to their apartment, hung out with them for a while, and had a very good conversation, which I'm happy, I'm so excited to bring to you now, because I wanted to get them on the show, and it is great that I was able to get them on at the very last episode, because in a way, this is an immensely fortuitous capstone to this project. So here's that talk. I'll see you on the other side. Okay, so thanks for doing the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hi.
So let's start with basic backgroundy kind of stuff. What's your sign? What's your pronouns?
My name's Dakota, and I'm an Aries. I'm an Aries sun, Libra moon, Gemini rising, which I always like to semi-endearingly refer to as the Hindenburg. My pronouns are they, them.
And where did you grow up?
That is a kind of complicated question. So basically, I was born in Tucson, Arizona. I was there for a while. I mainly went to like high school in Jersey, in South Jersey by the shore, or Central Jersey by the shore. And then the week after I graduated high school, I moved back to Arizona. And in the process of me going from Jersey to Arizona, I like kind of went through the South on what I like to call the scenic route, which was essentially just a couple of years of homelessness. I was thrown out of my house at an early age. Graduated high school by the skin of my teeth, and then met my birth mom, and that didn't work out, and just basically, like, was homeless in Jersey, then was homeless in the South, then was homeless in Arizona, got my shit together, then ended up moving into to New York in 2010.
And once you moved to New York, when did you, I mean, because now you're one of the co-owners of Catland Books.
Yeah.
But how long did it take for that sort of, like, for you to find this, like, what were you doing before then? How did that sort of come about?
Well, my whole New York time, I was a pro artist for MAC Cosmetics. And yeah, I was like a lead makeup artist. I did everything from 10 seasons backstage of Fashion Week. I worked on Broadway. I did TV and film. I worked at Tribeca Film Festival. I did celebrity makeup. I was all over the place. And I was at Times Square, which is the number one store in the world for MAC Cosmetics. And I was there for years. I was I started out at Bloomie's, at Bloomie Nails 59th Street, and then I like was promoted and yada yada yada. So I did that until like 2 years ago, around this time. Actually, yeah, right around this time, when I was unable to work anymore. And that was a very scary time, and I went to the doctor and had to go through a lot of shit, and then found out that I have fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis, possibly other things. They like want to send me to a specialist. There's like some GI issues, da 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 da. But basically, I kind of got, you know, benched because I can't really do the actual physical part of my job at Mac anymore at that point. So, you know, it's like standing for 8 hours and, right, like also being fully done up and in like a peak black outfit and, you know, running around and helping the highest volume of customers in the world, you know, and like doing all of that. And it just wasn't possible anymore. Which at the time really, really fucked me up, like to be honest. And like, sidebar, like, I've been a witch, like, my whole life, and I have been doing readings for 10 years and change.
Yeah.
And so I simultaneously heard about, through somebody I used to know, that there was, like, an opening at Catland for readers. And I had just moved to Brooklyn. I was like, you know, okay, let's figure this out. And I went in and, you know, I interviewed. Melissa had just come on as an owner, and there was another person there who used to be an owner. And they both sort of interviewed me, and then I came on as a reader. I was a reader for a long time. I was like the manager for a long time. I've been an acting owner for a long time. And then a while ago, I, you know, the papers were signed and everything actually,
right,
you know, was official, because the person whose shares I got was, it like basically, you know, allegedly stole a bunch of money and like ran off to Costa Rica. So,
like you do.
Like you do. Casual Saturday. And so basically, like having to track them down, and then we got all the legal stuff done. So, yeah, like that's how I got here. It's been like kind of arduous, but also like that's really organic at the same time, which, yeah, is really gratifying. And like feeling like I know where I fit is great, because like I could do anything I wanted, and I'm well aware of that. But like, kind of my entire solid adult life, like I've been on my own since I was, you know, whatever. But like, you know, I moved here at 20, like, and from then to now, you know, like my whole time in New York, my whole time of my 20s, I was one thing, and that was very much how I identified, like, who I am, yeah, by my job. You know, I was
like
raised
a top artist, and
right, like, and I was also raised by a Virgo who's like 5 feet of Sicilian rage, and who, you know, you are what you do. And so I had this like radical shift in identity, and like, of course, I didn't think like, oh, you can make a living doing what I do, right? And arguably you can't, but I, you know, I've kind of carved this thing out for myself, and I'm very happy with it. And,
yeah,
you know, I love my business partners. We work together really well. We're all very different. And, you know, the shop is very much my baby, and I love being there every day, and I love working on it every day, and I love, you know, all the great things that have come with being a part of it. And yeah, it's been a fucking fantastic journey, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty goddamn amazing, to be honest. Like, that whole, especially the rise and fall. So you were a witch the whole time, though. You were doing the makeup for runway shows and things of that sort. Like, when did the witchcraft start? How old were you?
I mean, like, technically, since I was a little kid. Like, since as long as I can remember. Because I would find certain twigs or certain things outside, and I would collect them, and then I would arrange them under my bed, and that was supposed to keep nightmares away. Like, no one told me these things, right?
Yeah.
But I was just doing them. Now, mind you, I was raised in, like, a radical, kind of boarding-in Christian evangelical cult, that was like really terrifying. And so it was very oppressive, and it was really like this very fear-driven, panic-inducing control structure that, of course, resulted in me being thrown onto the street. And so, yeah, like, it was hard because I always had this natural drive to, you know, I wanted to know about the stars, and I wanted to know about the wind, and I wanted to know about the moon, and I wanted to know about, you know, why I felt like I could talk to animals, and why I would whisper secrets to trees, and why I couldn't understand why I couldn't change into animals, and, like, you know, I didn't have anyone to talk to about that.
Right.
You know? Simultaneously, I was not only dealing with this, like, really horrific, oppressive church thing that we, like, went to 3 times a week, and, like, everything was, you know, centered around that, and,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was really awful, but also, you know, struggling with gender, struggling with sexuality, like, not struggling, but understanding, like, oh my god, if, like, they find out anything, you know, right. that would indicate cognizance of what was going on. I mean, I never, from, like, was ever gonna fucking make it. There was no way. Like, yeah. You know, they knew I had a fucking target on my back from jump. The minute I could fucking make words and I could walk, it was over. So, having that, having the religion thing, and also having being a witch, and, like, unfortunately, I have a really, really strong gift for mediumship.
Mm.
And so, I remember being, like, 5 years old, and getting shaken awake in the middle of the night, and the whole room being full of dead people, and, like, you don't have anyone to talk to about that in that situation, because if I was to go to my parents, I would be, like, brought in for basically an exorcism, because I was, like, you know,
yeah.
Full of evil. And so, you know, I couldn't tell my brother, because my brother was, like, a rat, and would always tell them everything, and it wasn't going to go well for me.
Yeah.
From the beginning. So.
So you tried to basically just hide all of this.
I tried to survive.
Yeah.
And I wish I could tell you that I was able to hide anything.
Yeah.
But you know me.
Yeah.
And anybody who's ever met me knows, like, I don't know what a poker face is.
Yeah.
I am 100% transparent all the time. I think out loud. Like, there was no way, and I've been like that as long as I can remember. I don't know any way to be that is not just authentic. Like, I am everything if I say something, I mean it. I'm not coming up with bullshit. Like, I just don't understand people who can do that. I admire them because they have a depth that I do not. I live at the front of my face, and I experience life viscerally, and I do everything head first.
Mm.
So, like, there was no way for me as a kid to know what the game was before I was already failing at it.
Yeah.
And painfully so,
yeah.
You know.
When did you... So, like, you have these experiences, but you don't have anyone to talk to about them.
Right.
When did you start thinking, like, I'm a witch, this is witchcraft...
To be honest with you, not until, like, my late teens. Because I had never heard of such a thing. I mean, I grew up without TV or internet. So, like, I didn't know about this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And everything was considered witchcraft. Like, we weren't, you know, if I had said something about, like, watching Sailor Moon in a friend's house, that was witchcraft, you know?
Yeah.
Because of the planets being involved. Or, like, Power Rangers was witchcraft. Like, and these were things that were preached from the pulpit in the church, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't let your kids go to karate because they'll be putting demons inside themselves.
What?
Because they have to, like, you know... because of, like, the things in, like, a karate class where they teach you to, like, breathe and, like, be centered and shit like that. Like, that's inviting demons in, you know?
So, like, would Lamaze be witchcraft?
Probably.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll probably have a demon baby. So, I mean, what it really came down to was, like, anything that the church did not offer as a paid service was witchcraft and, like, the devil. Yeah. We weren't allowed to celebrate Halloween. We would be pulled out of school. Every kid from the entire congregation, we were brought to church, and they had, like, a hayride and, like, games and stuff for a fall festival, which to me, now looking back, I can't help but have, like, a shit-eating grin, because I'm like, wow, you guys, like, took, like, American commercialism and, like, modernism out and made it, like, literally what it is, like, roots-wise. So, like, good on ya, but you really missed the whole purpose, which was, like, us learning about, quote-unquote, Samhain, and how that was, like, another name for the devil, and that, you know, it was this whole, you know, holiday that was, you know, designed by Satan. And
sorry, I just want to, because it's like, have you met my friend Sam? He wants me to sell my soul for candy.
Yeah.
So then what was, so when you finally, like, had the words for this in sort of the sense, it's like, what was that shift like? What did that feel like? What was that experience like?
Probably the same way that I felt when I finally figured out, like, a good word for me gender-wise. Like,
yeah.
It was like, oh, cool. Like, that's comfortable. I have a word for that now.
Okay.
It wasn't, because it doesn't, I'm not, like, the word comes way after the change.
Yeah.
There's no real change. It's a realization of, like, oh, cool. Like, this is the deal.
Yeah.
And then finding a word is like, oh, great. Now I can explain the deal to other people.
Cool.
You know, easily and succinctly. And they've heard of this thing, so hopefully, and, like, then they can, you know, understand it better.
And when did you start feeling, like, a sense of community with other people who were doing magic, doing witchcraft, doing things like that? Like, when did you find the others?
Online.
Okay.
For sure. But at Catland, you know, was a big part of it. A lot of the people that I met, and a lot of the people that, I knew previously, or I had met outside of Catland, finding out, like, oh, you are also someone who's into this. And, like, whatever word they would use. You know, like, I had never heard the word woo before I moved here. That's not a word from where I'm from. Like, that's,
yeah.
But that's, like, a lot of queers here talk about, like, woo, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, so you're, like, a woo queer. So, like, you're witchy, too. I get it. Like, so that's been good, like, knowing that, like, oh, there's this huge intersection between, like, queerness, transness, and witchiness that I can very much kind of enjoy and tap into and share with other people. That's been really awesome.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, like, community, for me, has never enabled what I do.
Yeah.
But it has enabled a really great pool for discourse and, like, I am really, like, a dyed-in-the-wool geek, if that's the word, for, like, somebody who doesn't just love what they do, but loves it, like, kind of passionately and zealously.
Yeah.
So, like, anything that I do, I love to talk to other people who do it. You know, I'm, like, the person who, like, I go see a movie in the movie theater, and I talk to everybody afterwards.
Yeah.
And, like, outside when I'm having a cigarette and being like, oh my god, what'd you think of this part? And, like, oh my god, this part. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I really like to enjoy things, from every angle, you know. I watch a movie and then I immediately, the very first thing I do, B knows, I go on IMDb, I read all the trivia, I read all the stuff that I can about it because I want to know. And, you know, I don't know, like, if I'm gonna be involved with something, I like to be involved completely, if that makes sense.
Perfect sense.
So
I mean, so I saw a video you did on YouTube I think a few years ago,
oh god,
where you were asking the question, or someone had asked the question, when do you get to say you're a witch? And you gave, I think, a really good answer to that. And I don't want you to, like, have to rehash that. But it's been a couple years, so maybe you've changed your mind slightly. I, like, have no
memory, basically.
Perfect.
Because of, like, my disabilities. So you'll have to refresh on what I said.
Oh, god. Wait, what did you say? You said, so what you said, I think, was something along the lines that no one tells you you're a witch. You don't have to, like, there's no authority that you have to, like, bow down to or get permission from.
Yeah.
And that there's an impulse in a lot of people who get to invested in this and get interested in this to, like, buy every book they can find, read everything they can do. And that's valid and that's fine, but not necessary
at all. Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, I don't need anybody to tell me that I'm trans.
Yeah.
I know I'm trans. And so it's the same thing as being a witch, and the same thing about being queer, and the same thing about which color is my favorite color, or which number is my lucky number.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel natural affinities to things. I'm going to feel natural drives and urges and attractions and repulsions, and things are going to either be, like, concrete taboo for me, or they're just going to be, like, something I really enjoy fully and that I love to do all the time. And so, you know, those things will also shift. And, like, at the end of the day, like, if you don't know that you're a witch and you need somebody else to tell you, then what the fuck is the point of being a witch? Because to me, and I ground this not only in my experience, but also in, like, the amount of research that I do and the historicity of it, like, witchcraft is about autonomy and agency and personhood, and it's the highest manifestation of that as far as I'm concerned, because basically it's saying, okay, I have a worldview, whether that's order, whether that's chaos, whether that's a mixture of both or whatever. I don't, you know, I don't do dualities or polarities. But, like, at the end of the day, like, you're going to have a take on it, right? And, like, how it's not about what you believe. It's about how you engage with it. Yeah. It's about what you do with it. And being a witch is inherently proactive. Mm. It says, I have a set of circumstances and I'd like to alter them in some way.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is really just, like, says something about a person that I find so beautiful, which is that I don't have to settle for what I'm given. I will go get what I want.
Fuck yeah.
That's what being a witch is at its very core. You know, that's what witchcraft practices do. So knowing that, you know, it was really only my immediate family that was the cult, but of course we were, you know, very much strained with everyone else for a significant amount of time. So knowing that, like, on my father's side, it's all Strega, which is, like, Italian Catholic folk magic, and on my mother's side, my birth mother, who I was not raised with,
yeah,
it's all hoodoo and conjure and root work. And so these are both traditions of poor people who are just trying to make ends meet, you know, and are just trying to live life and have some quality of life. And when that is denied by the powers that be, whether that's, like, you know, violent capitalism or disenfranchisement or whatever, that's what you do. This is how you navigate that,
yeah,
you know? So I don't really understand people who need permission.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, I kind of feel like, I don't know, you're cut from a different cloth than me. That's all I can say is, like, I don't have respect for it. I don't have patience for it. I don't really get it. And part of it is enjoyable because I get to see that look in somebody's eye when I teach my classes and, like, we're talking about candle colors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what do you think green candles do? It's a fucking stick of wax. It has no inherent value.
Yeah.
You know, until you do something to it. And you can't act as if green has some solid meaning just because we've ascribed something to it in this day and age, you know, and that's shared across our sociopolitical climate for the most part. That doesn't mean anything in terms of witchcraft. You know, that's not what you should be basing this on. If you feel like green means envy more than it means money, or that it means growth, or that it means the earth, or it means all of those things, then you should go with that. But maybe that's not what you think, and you should go with what you think, because it's up to you. If you look at, again, with candle colors, like, a colored wax is a new invention in the history of humanity. So what do you think people did to get their spells done before they could dye their wax?
Yeah.
You fucking idiot. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, why do you need someone to spoon feed you? Figure this out.
Yeah.
I'm a self-educated person. You know, that's exactly what I am. So sometimes it is hard for me to realize, like, oh my God, why can everybody not just figure this out for themselves? Like, what is wrong with you? You know?
Yeah.
Because I get people who, at my class, they get really frustrated.
Yeah.
They're like, I thought you would tell us what to do.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, then you picked the wrong class.
Yeah.
I very much say, on all media possible, I am not going to do that. I'm going to basically challenge you and empower you to make your own structure. But I'm absolutely not going to just, like, come up with a religion and sell it to you.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
I mean,
so what do you want from me?
You got away from that. You had to.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I don't see any reason why I would want to be involved with it. Because, like, creating a religion and selling it to people is just, like, kind of the height of, like, shitty cishet white guy hubris. You know, like, it's just not something I even, it's so foreign to me and I just don't get it at all. So that's something I don't know, that I've, like, kind of always been really blown away by.
Yeah.
To be honest. So
let's get down to, like, mechanics for a hot second.
Okay.
So you have been doing readings for people for at least a decade.
At least a decade, yeah.
What methods do you use? How do you go about a thing like that?
I did fortune telling for other kids at camp, at my summer camp. I went to, like, a summer camp for, like, it was, like...
Bible camp?
No, it was a regular summer camp. It was free. And so we went and, like, it was just where you went during the day while your parents were at work. And then they'd come pick you up. Oh, not, like, sleepaway camp, please. That would be fucking awesome. I never got to do that. But, yeah, like, it was... I did all kinds of shit nobody was gonna know about. Now that I look at it, I was doing pendulums. Like palomancy with pendulum. I would pick up something that I liked on the ground, tie string around it, and then use it. And I would do, like, side to side is no, and circles are yes. Mm. And I would do that on my friends. I'd make them put their palm up, and I would do it, and I'd, you know, let them ask questions. We always played card games, like, with playing cards. Yeah. And I taught myself how to do readings with playing cards. My own system that I just came up with in my head. And then found out that that is historically what... my family on my father's side did, but that is very much what my mother's mother, my mother's aunt, my mother's grandmother, all of them read with playing cards.
Kudu side of the family.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So that was a big part of it. I would look at my friend's palms, and I would try to figure out what I thought it meant. And I didn't even know that palm reading was a thing. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to pick that up.
Stumbled upon,
like,
classic methods.
Right. I just kind of, like, went with what I thought was right. And that was a lot of it, you know? Like, I just didn't know what else I was supposed to do because I didn't know anything about it, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things that I really liked doing, too, was I would do my own form of... Do you want to, like, wait until that dog goes away?
So you were basically doing everything that came to mind and sort of recreating cardamancy, palamancy, all sorts of... Does intuition still play, like, I mean, I feel like intuition must still play, like, a huge role in the readings you're doing, even though you've, like, taught yourself a lot of stuff?
Well, the thing is that back then, like, I was coming up with systems, and then what happened was, like, at this point in my life, I have general ideas of, like, outside of a reading, what things do. But when I'm in a reading, everything that I do, I put down the cards because it's like the action that I do, which basically catalyzes the reading. It's saying I'm open for work, I'm ready to go, yeah. You know, my spirits are here, your spirits are welcome. But also the cards are important because they just basically act as flashpoints for intuition. They don't say anything in and of themselves, if that makes sense. Perfect. I just intuitively tell you a story, or basically I tell you your story, and then it's interesting, actually, because, like, sometimes it's too good. Like, somebody books an hour reading for me, and yeah. I always start out with a general reading. I don't want to know anything. Don't talk to me. I just do a general reading, and then I have time for questions. And I have to tell you, like, 8 or 9 times out of 10, somebody's like, I don't have any, you already covered everything. And I'm like, oh, well, come up with something, because we have to waste another half an hour, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, it's very, very, very much intuition-driven, which I hate saying, and I've never really told anybody before, because, like, there's so many people out there who are total fucking frauds who say that to justify the fact that they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And that they don't want to take the time, that they're lazy.
Yeah.
They don't want to take the time to learn anything. They don't want to take the time to, like, put the work in and earn their spot. That's a lot of it as well that, you know, really bothers me.
You mentioned, you know, when you do reading, your spirits are there, their spirits are welcome.
Yeah.
How much spirit work do you do? Like, do you have go-to spirits? Because I think you've mentioned you sort of have a relationship with St. Michael to some extent.
Well, when I say my spirits, I mean my ancestors.
Oh, okay.
Basically, everything that I do is rooted in my ancestors.
Okay.
That is just my practice. That's what I come from. That's what I honor. And so they're the ones that make this stuff possible, right? So when I'm in a reading, I have my helping spirits with me, right? Which are my ancestral helping spirits and my animal helping spirits. And you get your... In my... in my experience, you get your animal helping spirits from your ancestors. What's happening is you and me are sitting down, and there is this veil that is erected around us that is my own creation, because that's exactly what, that's like what I've agreed to.
Yeah.
And then your people show up. Your father's side shows up over this shoulder, and your mother's side shows up over this shoulder. And so I can look at them, and I don't want to see full body apparitions, like, crystal clear. I just don't like it, because of, like, whatever.
It's spooky.
So I do the veil thing. So I can get everything I need, and I can see them enough to, like, verify things, but I don't need them, like, getting any closer. It's a boundary for me.
Yeah.
So anything that appears over your head, though, is a spirit that's, like, not related to you. So sometimes somebody will have, like, a saint above their head, or they'll have, you know, something above their head. As far as spirits that I work with, they're not involved with the readings. Ever. So, unless I'm, like, pointing out, hey, this is one of your saints, or whatever. I do my ongoing work with St. Lucy and St. Clair, because they are the patronesses of divination and clairvoyance and all of that. We get clairvoyance from St. Clair. So basically St. Lucy is sort of like the left hand, and St. Clair is the right hand. I do my ongoing, like, kind of work and my offerings and everything else to them as well, because they both, like, kind of, you know, guard me and ensure that things are going to stay real clear, things are going to stay real focused, and also that I will continue to have, like, business come my way.
Yeah.
So that is mainly the spirits connected to my readings. The only other saint that's usually involved is Saint Benedict. I have a Saint Benedict's medal in my back pocket or in my shoe every single time that I do a reading. It's the exorcism medal, so I can pull it out anytime that I need, and just, it basically just cuts off everything.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody goes, my spirits, your spirits, everybody leaves. In case I don't like what's going on.
Yeah. Do you need to pull that kill switch often, or is that
rarely?
Okay.
Yeah. Very, very rarely do I have to do that. Sometimes that'll be because, like, somebody's ancestral helping spirits, you know, have fallen into such disrepair that they can't tend the line anymore, and they'll have, you know, like, some other ancestor will show up, you know, that's not an ancestral helping spirit that shouldn't be there.
Okay.
Like, somebody's, like, drunk uncle that touches kids.
Oh, okay,
like,
yeah.
I have to be like, oh, you're not supposed to be here, boop, and, like, you know, let them know, like, hey, if you think your ancestors are approaching you, they're not, so let's go ahead and fix that before you go any further. So that's kind of the situation that normally that would come up in a reading.
Yeah.
There has been two times I can think of that someone came in with some negative, like, really nasty, malicious shit attached to them that I had to, like, kill with fire. But that's not normal.
So when you make offerings to St. Lucy and St. Clair, like, what kind of offerings are you making? Like,
well, I have my personal relationship with my spirits that I don't ever talk about. That
fair only enough.
Happens in my house. And then I have my kind of working relationship that happens usually at the shop or at a home altar. But they're pretty simple. Like, I mean, it's pretty easy with St. Clair. It's always water and an egg. That's it. Not together at the same, not like an egg in water, but water and an egg, because that is her traditional offering, because she was the founder of the Poor Clairs.
Okay.
And took a vow of poverty. So she didn't, you know, there's no room for, like, glitz and glam with her.
Yeah.
Now, St. Lucy's a little bit different. Mostly with Lucy, it's candles and flowers, and then there will be other things that I offer as well. I have several statues of her, that's part of it. I make, different offerings to her based on, like, what's going on. It's a little bit more, not freeform, but, like, it changes to fit the circumstance.
Situation.
Changes to fit the petition, really.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I don't ever make offerings, like, until the petition is fulfilled. But based on the petition, then I will match it to that. So I'll say, hey, this is what I need, this is what I'm offering. Mm-hmm. And then I get it, and I give them the offering.
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of developing and learning about these traditions, Strega, Hoodoo, and so on, how much have you worked with your ancestral spirits for that sort of thing?
Some.
Okay.
So I would say it's about 50-50. Okay. Like, a lot of it is learning my lineage and, like, my heritage through that. Mm. So there's a lot of, like, anecdotal stuff, and a lot of, like, word of mouth, and a lot of family stories that I can get from my birth mom to learn about everything that I didn't grow up with. Mm. And then I can also, like, I deal with a lot of stuff in my father's side of the family through learning family history, through talking to people, to finding out, like, you know, what did my great-grandmother do when she was cooking versus when someone was sick versus whatever. And then looking at that with, like, my grandmother, my dad's mom, how she cooked and, or how she cooks. She's still around. We'll be around after all of us are gone. Like, I look back, you know, at what I always had noticed as a kid and being like, oh, like, why do we do that versus this other thing, you know? And so there, it's always been there, and I grew up around it on the Strega side. But the Hoodoo side was really interesting because it was what I was already doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that until I picked it all up, you know, from meeting my birth mom and learning about my family and all of that. Yeah.
When, that's interesting. So, like, when I think about you talking about Hoodoo, like, the thing that really sticks in my memory is you describing the relationship between, like, the way in which the Bible in particular is used in Hoodoo, because, you know, you just sort of, you pick up what's around.
Yeah.
And that's what's around.
Yeah.
Were you using the Bible in magical, in sort of magical ways before meeting your birth mom and talking about that stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
I had always found the Psalms to be very magical because of, my education growing up in the church. It was not uncommon that you would, you know, like, growing up, there was definitely the practice of, like, a house blessing and taking oil, like olive oil, it had to be olive oil, and doing the sign of the cross over all the doors and all the windows, and reciting Psalm 23 as you went through the house, and, you know, so, like, I was never, it was never foreign to me that, like, the Psalms were for these things, but, like, also using the Psalms to get a job or, like, whatever, that's kind of outside the purview of what I was taught, so, like, learning that part of it was like, oh, this is so much more practically efficacious than I thought it was, like, that's great. And so it was more an expansion than it was a, like, a sea change, if that makes sense.
Perfectly.
Yeah. I was never, I've never been against Christianity, because I grew up with it. I am very much opposed to the type of Christianity that I grew up in, which unfortunately is everywhere. And, that's a fucked up part of it. But you also have to kind of, look, and it's in the Bible, you shall know them by the by their fruit, by the fruit that they bear. Well, if a tree keeps producing rotten, fucked up, poisonous fruit, you might want to look at the tree. You know, and so that is part of my issue. And also, obviously, the fact that, like, this is a deified, abusive father slash husband, so that's not really working for me either. I just can't see myself worshiping a deity who can't be known. And also who requires me to, like, live in fear of them and love them.
Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah, like, that's a part of it. Also, like, I'm not worshipping a fucking phallus in the sky. That's not happening. So a lot of reasons why, like, Christianity would never work for me. I just have too many questions. And so, like, as far as Abrahamic monotheism goes, if you're, like, somebody who has a lot of doubt and is skeptical and wants to learn things, that's not the one you go with, you know? I'd make a great Jew because I'd be able to, like, ask all the questions. And, you know, I've always loved Judaism because, you know, you have something like the Talmud where you have somebody, you have a rabbi today who's going to spend his entire life trying to win an argument over one scripture with a rabbi who died 300 years ago. You know, that to me is really dedication to what you believe and what you are. And there's a culture and a vibrancy to it that you don't see in Christianity for a reason, you know? And so, you know, it's not, my dad's mom is Jewish, actually. didn't tell us that until like a couple of years ago. That was a whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you develop a working relationship with these Christian.
Yeah.
It's like these saints. Like,
but the thing is that, like, the reason like the Psalms work is because they're self-encapsulated spells. And they've been used for thousands of years by Jews, by Muslims, or Christians to affect a change. So there's already the historicity there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, metaphysically or spiritually or energetically, the way I look at it as, these are blank checks that Yahweh or Jehovah or whoever it is wrote. And what you're doing is you're just cashing them. Now, if I get a check that's issued by Chase, I don't have to have an account at Chase to cash it.
Okay.
You wrote the check. I can cash it here.
Yeah.
You get it?
Yeah, they made the promise to everybody.
Exactly. It's a promissory note that you sent out. I'm just cashing in on it. And I don't have to do anything to get it.
Yeah, that's... Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, because that... Because you were talking about, like, you will hold off on the offering to, say, St. Lucy until the thing is done that you asked for.
Yep.
But with, like, Yahweh, you just...
Well, it's very much different, because it's a devotional relationship versus a transactional relationship.
Mm.
So a devotional relationship, like you're supposed to have with the God of the Bible, is, oh, I throw myself on the mercy seat, you know, I throw everything that I've ever had to the wind, and I hope that you'll actually hear my prayer. Yeah. Not even guaranteeing that it'll be answered, right?
Yeah.
Or then you have a transactional relationship, which is like, oh, hey, St. Expedite, I need this.
Yeah.
And St. Expedite goes, okay, here you go, Dakota. And I go, okay, here's a slice of Sara Lee pound cake and a shot of whiskey and a red candle. You know, it's very easy. It's a transactional relationship.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas the devotional relationship has other parts of it too, which is, if you're going to fucking issue blessings and issue all these things and just say, you know, okay, this is what's going to happen, then you could go ahead and, you know, people could cash in on it if they wanted. There's no transaction there anymore. You've removed the transaction. I don't have to give you anything to get it.
Yeah, it's a charity versus a shop.
There you go.
Okay, cool. I think that's basically all the time we've got for this. But before we close things out, like, well, we should definitely plug. I mean, so you're an owner of Catland.
Yeah.
You do Black Hand.
Black Hand Conjure.
You do Swamp Witch.
No, that's B.
That's B.
That's my partner, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's plug that anyway, then.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, I make a line of spiritual bats and condition oils rooted in family history, family recipes, family tradition, which I have 24 formulas. They come in a bath and an oils, so spiritual baths and condition oils. I love making them. I've been making them for a long time now, and I have really satisfied customers, which I think you can attest to. You've seen people that, like, you know,
people are,
will stuff, physically fight you if we're out of Witch Queen oil. So
yeah, that stuff doesn't stay on the shelf.
Yeah, so it's been good. I mean, it's been good to me. I've been good to it. So that's a very big passion of mine, is making those things and having that spiritual technology available, because that's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Now my partner, we kind of go by like the witch and the wolf. So I'm the witch, my partner's the wolf. So B, who is my partner, who is my soulmate, my better half, basically collects and curates different oddities and curios, and all of these are of the dead animal type. So if you need a vial of dead bees or a couple deer teeth or some pheasant feet, you know who to go to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty easy. You know, if you want to hit up B, it's just at Swamp Witch Curios on Insta. And they've got a really great thriving page that they just set up. As far as me, I don't really have that. I don't have like an online presence. I've gone very much back and forth about that. I purchased the witchandthewolf.com, so like keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, sure.
And I should have like my online shop and everything else through there.
Cool.
I'm just still kind of debating on whether or not that's something I want to do, to be honest, but we'll see. I don't know. I've been, for the past good like 2 years, I've been very focused on in-person interaction.
Yeah.
Which has been good for me, so I think it might be now time for me to like dip my toes into the world wide web, I guess. But I don't know. We'll see.
The internet is not real.
The interwebs is scary. It's a scary place.
It can hurt you, but also give you money.
Yes, and that is why I would engage with it, because if you think about it, like, you know, people are always like, oh, it's just online. And it's like, yeah, but, like, I think at the last estimate, which was around 2010, I think, like, 3% of all currency in America was actually paper money.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah. That says something about being online, you know?
Oh, last thing.
Ask as many questions as you want. Don't worry about it. You can just edit shit out if you wanted. Yeah. I'm long-winded.
I know. Well, I'm just like, it's always nice to have like a capstone for these.
Yeah.
If there was sort of a thing you wanted to like, if you could sort of give if you had a blanket platform to sort of say something to the kids out there, the people out there who are like interested in witchcraft, who like, maybe you're just starting out with this stuff, maybe they're trying to like develop and they don't have a lot of people around them to sort of support them and stuff like that. Like, what would you say?
One of the tattoos that I'm going to be getting soon is going to be on my right collarbone in Latin. And it's one of my favorite quotes of all time. It's actually from a Madonna song. It's from the song Justify My Love. And it's, poor is the man whose pleasures depend on the permission of another.
Mm.
And I believe that I've lived that wholeheartedly for 28 years and it has never steered me wrong, to be honest. So, yeah. At the end of the day, if you are seeking somebody else's approval, if you're seeking somebody else's permission, if you're seeking somebody else's acknowledgement or affirmation, you really are wasting an immense amount of emotional and intellectual energy and labor. It's a fool's task. Like, you don't need anyone's permission to be who you are, what you are. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. You don't need anybody's validation. You don't need their consideration. You know, you really do have to remember that at the very end of the day, like, you have to go to bed every day, you, and you have to wake up every day, you. So if you're not enjoying riding around in your meat sack, you might want to do something about it. And if witchcraft seems to be one of those things, then you need to go for it, and you need to go for it full force. You know, I guess that would kind of be my thing. I don't know, but I guess that'd be my take on it.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks.
And also that soft polytheism is bullshit.
Soft polytheism?
Yeah, that's just like, that's something that just irks me to no fucking end.
What is soft polytheism?
You don't know about this? Okay,
so I haven't heard this before.
So there's soft polytheism and hard polytheism, right? So soft polytheism is the, you know, hippy-dippy fucking 90s white girl culture vulture Wicca bitches who are like, oh, all goddesses are one goddess and all gods are one god and all of it is one divinity and it's all beautiful in the cosmos and the universe and we're all connected. Hard polytheism goes towards where I'm at, and I'm an omnitheist, so I believe that all entities, spirits, deities that have ever been known, the ones that are even forgotten, the ones whose people were wiped out and languages are dead and everything else,
yeah,
they're all real, they're all autonomous, they're all separate, they're all individual, and that is something that we have to navigate, just as we are all separate and autonomous and individual. So I also believe that they can speak for themselves. So, like, good luck with your fucking bastardized Orisha ritual. Get ready to fucking have your brain turn into mush.
Yeah.
Like,
I've never really tried working with ancestral spirits in, like, a direct and open way, and part of me makes me very nervous because, like, the family is very German. And I know, like, the bad part of that is, like, one little... You just gotta jump over that part.
Yeah, but, like, here's the thing that people get fucked up about spirits with, right? Is, like, especially ancestors. You gotta remember, like, scientists have proven through the fossil record that, like, we as human beings, as you and me right now, have been on this planet for 100,000 years.
Yeah.
We only have, like, as far as we know, maybe, like, 5,000 years of history? Seven on a good day?
Yeah.
So, like, there's no telling who you're related to.
Okay.
So you're related by blood and by bone to people all the way back to 100,000 years ago, to the beginning, whatever the beginning was.
Same mitochondria. Now,
the fucked up thing is, and this is where I really get, like, tripped out, Stephen Hawking and Richard Dawkins are going more for, like, 300,000 years. And, like, I don't know, there's not enough concrete shit yet, but, like, that's where they're going.
Yeah.
So, like, at the end of the day, you're, you know, every single axe murderer, rapist,
pedophile, they're related to somebody.
Yeah.
So you can't think it's all a good bunch, but it also can't all be a bad bunch either.
That's fair.
And in my practice, what you work with is not those people, not every single person ever.
Yeah.
Because what that says is, when you die, you're going to go, I don't know, theoretically, like, float on a cloud somewhere and, like, just be looking down and waiting for your great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter to, like, fuck her life up and go back to her shitty boyfriend. And then you're like, oh, guess I'm on call. Like, that's eternal servitude, right?
It just sounds like being dead is like being the grandmother who's like, my kids never call.
Exactly. So that would be awful, right?
Yeah.
So, like, what I know of it, what I've been shown, and, like, what I understand is there are ancestral helping spirits. These are the people who tend the line. These are the people who had Sunday family dinner at their house. These are the people who settled the family conflicts. These are the people who did the family reunions.
Yeah.
And there's only a small handful of them from all over time, right? And so there's maybe like four or five of them that I've normally seen. And so what happens is that they are the ones who tend the line, and they are the ones who speak for the line.
Yeah.
So when you die, they're there, and they say, you're dead. And then they bring you to where you're going to go, right? Yeah. So the thing is that when you are talking to your ancestors, you're not talking to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that you ever were biologically connected to. You're talking to a select group of spirits whose job it is to be the liaison between the dead and the living.
Massive, massive thanks to Dakota for doing this interview. Check them out on social media. Look for them on Instagram. Look them on Facebook. Check out Black Hand Conjure, thewolfandthewitch.com, and the work their partner B is doing with Swamp Witch Curios. And, yeah, thank you so much for listening to the show as it has existed. People have asked me, why is the show ending? And I feel like I do owe you some explanation. And that explanation, briefly put, is simply that this was a very good thing to do for a while. But my life is getting filled up with a bunch of other things, and I don't want to do this show if I can't give it the attention and energy it so richly deserves. But I'm not disappearing, so by all means, if you have occult questions or questions about witchcraft and you want to reach out to me, just email me at my email address that is mine, not the show's. That's cooper.wilhelm@gmail.com. cooper.wilhelm@gmail.com. And, you know, I'll try to find an answer for you. And, yeah. Oh, I should mention, I have a book coming out this month. Or, actually, to anyone you're listening to this, if you're listening to the live broadcast, it comes out tomorrow. If you're listening to the podcast, it came out this week. But I have a book coming out. It's not terribly occult. It's, I mean, I'm doing it, so it's a bit occult on that account. But it's a collection of poems called Dumb Heart, Stupid Face. And it is coming from Siren Songs, which is a little publisher here in Brooklyn. So, you know, check that out. If you're interested, if you like poetry, you know, might as well take a look at it. So that's, I'll put a link to it when this becomes a podcast, in case you're curious. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing this time with me, sharing your curiosity with witchcraft, and thank you to all the people who were willing to talk to me about their magical journeys and about this thing that is beautiful and is bigger than all of us and has treated us very well. So stay as witchy as you can, and by all means, feel free to reach out. I'll see the rest of you somewhere down the road and into the dark.